Hi, I'm Deborah Lindad, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. And we do that because there's so many toxic chemicals in our consumer products, in the air we breathe, in the water we drink, in the food we eat, even in our bodies, which they're storing from past exposures. And so we need to do, in order to be healthy, we need to do everything that we can do to identify toxic chemicals around us, to make choices, to buy products that don't have toxic chemicals in them, to remove toxic chemicals from our body. And on this show, we talk about how to do all those things. And I interview wonderful guests who are doing these things, who are making these products, who are working behind the scenes, who are working to change regulations, all the things that need to happen in order to have a world without toxics. Today is Wednesday, December 11th, 2013, and I'm here on a beautiful winter day in Florida where the sun is shining and it's 70 degrees, and that's about how it's going to be all winter. Usually it doesn't rain here. It rains in the summertime, all summer. It rains all summer. But here, this is just about what it's like in Florida, so you can imagine me sitting here at the microphone looking out over my garden with the sun shining. Today we're going to talk about something a little different than we usually talk about. We're not going to be talking about what happens on the consumer end. We're going to be talking about what happens behind the scenes. And my guest today is Peggy Mayers. She's the executive director and CEO of the Organic Materials Review Institute. And what they do is they provide organic certifiers, growers, manufacturers, and suppliers an independent review of the products and materials intended for use in certified organic products and in the handling of them and processing. And so just like you and I are looking for, say, a product that has the USDA certified organic seal on it, people who are certifying, those people who are doing that certification, and the growers are looking to this organization to tell them what are the products they can use on organic foods and fibers in the growing process and when they're certifying. So if somebody, say a certifier, is looking at a process that a grower is using, he might look and say, well, are you using this and this and this chemical? And what this organization does is make lists of chemicals, materials, products that can be used in the organic process so that it makes everything easier. Anyway, hello, Peggy. Thank you for being with me today.
Hello, Deborah. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Well, we have a lot to talk about. This is a big subject. First, tell me about your organization. And how you personally, I know you have a long history of working in the organic movement, so tell us about you and the organization and how the two of you came together.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. Well, first of all, the Organic Materials Review Institute, or OMRI as we call it, is a nonprofit organization, and we were founded back in 1997. Now, some of the first organic certifiers started doing their work back in the early 70s, and part of their work, as you said, it was what OMRI does now. They were having to look at all of the inputs, the fertilizers, the pest control products and so forth that the organic farmers were using. And the certifier had to look at that and determine whether it was compliant to the organic standards. So in the late 90s, some certifiers got together and said, you know, we're so busy doing this material review that we don't really have time for our main work, which is organic certification. And so they actually pooled their material review programs, and they took their lists that existed at the time and their files and everything and put them all together and created this nonprofit organization called OMRI, so that we could do that detailed material review work and allow the certifiers to do the organic certification work that they were intended to do. And so we've, like I said, we've been in existence since 1997, and really our main clients are the certifiers who rely on our decisions. And so,
just for the listeners to get the lineup straight. Excuse me. So there's you who are determining the safety of the materials that are used, and then there's the certifiers, and then there's the growers, and then there's the and the certifiers are saying to the growers, this is okay. And then when the certifier says it's okay, then it becomes a product and it gets sold with the USDA seal on it.
Correct. That's right.
Okay, good.
Right. Yeah, you got it exactly right there. And so, yeah, I've been involved in organic since 1996 when I was working for a small natural food store, and we sold primarily organic products. I've actually been buying organic myself as a consumer since 1985. That's when I started looking at labels and understanding where my food came from and so forth. So I'm what you would call a core organic consumer, buying primarily organic.
Me too. That's about when I started.
Oh, good.
1987.
Great. That's my personal passion, and I've worked in nonprofit organizations. I worked for a Girl Scout Council. I worked for a Humane Society, and so nonprofit has really been my focus in my career. I've been in nonprofits for about 17 years. I've been in the organic industry, as I said, since 96. And so together, my personal interest and my professional experience brought me here to OMRI to be the executive director. And before I was here, I was the executive director and CEO at California Certified Organic Farmers, or CCOF, which is one of the largest and oldest organic certification agencies in North America.
And I remember them because I used to live in California.
Oh, yeah. All right. We got a
lot of. So I was always looking for the CCOF certified organic food.
Ah, excellent. Great.
Yes, yeah.
And the other thing, too, that I'll mention at this point is OMRI review and OMRI listing is voluntary. You know, it's not required for an input manufacturer to be OMRI listed in order for farmers to use their products. However, certifiers really rely on OMRI. The growers look for OMRI listing. So the manufacturers know that in order to make it easier for everyone, they get the OMRI listing and then it's good to go.
That's so great. So you're the one in charge of the organization that is really defining what goes into organic foods and fibers. Yes?
Somewhat, yeah. I wouldn't say that we define it, because that's really up to the USDA National Organic Program.
True.
So what we do,
what you're
doing
is you're the one that is kind of executing the orders to come up with whether it's the practical way to meet those standards.
Right, executing, and also there's some interpretation as well, because the standard, the National Organic Standards, aren't overly prescriptive. So there are some areas that require interpretation, and one of those gray areas really is material review. And so we do have to interpret the National Organic Program standards, and we actually create our own standards for areas where it is gray, and we've interpreted them in our way, and so we publish those standards so everyone understands how we're conducting our reviews.
Okay, good. That's a very important role that you're playing. So I've seen this term ISO accreditation. I can't even say that word. Accreditation?
Yes.
What is that?
ISO accreditation is something that's well known in the world of certification. And what that means, there is it's an international standard, and OMRI is ISO accredited. And what that means is that you can receive this accreditation from a number of bodies out there. We receive our accreditation from the USDA, not from the NOP, but from the USDA. And what they do is they look at the ISO standards. Just like there are organic standards, there are ISO standards. And
what does ISO stand for?
You know, I knew you were going to ask that. It's one of those international terms where the letters don't match up with the actual words. But it's an international standard.
Like international something organization.
Standard setting something or another. Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't know that. But essentially what the USDA does is we are audited every year, and they review our policies and procedures. And they do two things. Number one, they ensure that our policies and procedures are in line with the ISO standards. And number two, what's really important, is they audit us to make sure that we're doing what we say we're doing. Because they don't want organizations, you know, putting something in their policies and then not following them.
Yes, of course. We need to take a break. And we'll be right back with lots more questions for you, Peggy. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Peggy Mayers, Executive Director and CEO of the Organic Materials Review Institute. And they are at omri.org. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd, and my guest today is Peggy Mayers, Executive Director and CEO of Organic Materials Review Institute. And what they do is they review the materials that go into the growing and processing and handling of organic ingredients that go into organic products. I think I got that. Okay, so the reason that your organization exists, Peggy, is because you're offering a solution to the toxic chemicals that are in our food supply. So tell us about what these toxic inputs are.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think probably when people think mostly about toxic inputs, they're thinking about pesticides. And that's something that people look to organic for, is less persistent toxic pest control products and fertilizers and so forth. Obviously, with any kind of pest control product, there's some toxicity to it just because of its intention to kill pests. But in organic, tend to be less toxic, less persistent in the environment. In other words, they don't hang around as long. And There's something called the National List that is maintained by the National Organic Program. And the National List in general is described as, let me start over again. So in general, non-synthetic substances are allowed in organic production unless they're specifically
prohibited. Can I interrupt you a minute? Because I want to ask you a question. This has been on my mind for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Since one of my other guests talked about this. Okay, so the first thing is that there's synthetic chemicals, which are made from petroleum, and then there's what we could call natural chemicals that are made from or are just straight out of nature or made with renewable ingredients as the feedstock. And the feedstock, for people who don't know what that term is the original raw source material that's used to make something industrially. So in on this list, you would have pest controls or other chemicals for other purposes, which are both synthetic and natural. Right?
That
you're not excluding synthetics. And the question that I really have is that this previous guest said that as an organic grower, that an organic grower could be using a renewable natural chemical that actually is toxic. And so I got a little confused about that, and I'm hoping that you can clear this up about that there's toxic versus non-toxic, and there's natural versus synthetic. And I'll just clarify that just because something is synthetic doesn't mean it's toxic, and just because something's natural doesn't mean it's safe. So could you address all that whole confusion?
Well, I will try because I'm not a scientist and I'm not a technical expert. So maybe that's good. Maybe I can talk from a layman's terms. I don't know. But there are both synthetics and natural or non-synthetics. That those terms are used interchangeably. And so first I'll clarify that non-synthetic materials are allowed in organic production unless they're specifically prohibited, and in general, synthetic substances are prohibited unless they're specifically allowed. So right there, the National List is intended to primarily be natural materials. However, there are synthetics that are reviewed and looked at and allowed. So in terms of toxicity, that's, you know, again, I'm not a scientist, but I can tell you, for example, one thing that I've heard of are, for example, pyrethrum, which comes from natural plants. It's a botanical extract. And so I'm looking here, for example, that is a non-synthetic material because it's plant-based. It is allowed in organic production. There are some restrictions. For example, they're saying liquid formulations that have a prohibited inert ingredient are not allowed, but otherwise those are allowed. Now, pyrethroids, which I understand are also come from are plant-based, are somehow synthetic in the way that they're processed. And so in that case, it's prohibited. So that would be an example of something that would be, you know, natural. It comes from the environment, but in one case, it's allowed, but in another case, it's prohibited, and it has to do with the way that it's manufactured. So I would agree that, you know, there are some natural products that, you know, are pretty non-toxic. You know, for example, garlic, right. You know, garlic can be used as a pest control product. That's clearly right. A natural product that's non-toxic, but yet there are other naturals that can be toxic, primarily because of the way that they're combined with other chemicals or the way that they're manufactured and that sort of thing.
So they would then be an exception on the national list? I mean, can we assume, I guess what this is all boiling down to, mm-hmm. is can we assume as consumers that there's not going to be toxic chemicals on our organic food or fibers? If they're certified, there's not going to be toxic ingredients there, whether they're natural or synthetic.
Well, that's something that's being worked on right now, because in the past, this is something that people don't realize, but organic certification is a process certification. In other words, the certifiers look at how is that food grown and processed. What they don't necessarily do, they do not certify the end product. Even though it looks like they do, even though the seal is there on the product, what they're certifying is the process. But what's been happening over the last year is the National Organic Program has told certifiers, you must test a certain, I think it's maybe 5% of the products that you certify. You must randomly test them to see what kind of residues there are. And so this is something that the National Organic Program, or the NOP, is starting to get into, looking more at the end product and what sort of residues may exist at that time.
I'm so glad they're doing that. This is fascinating. Yeah. This is exactly what we need to be knowing. We need to take another break. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindiad, and we're talking today with Peggy Mayers, Executive Director and CEO of the Organic Materials Review Institute. They're at omri.org, and please stay with us. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindiad, and my guest today is Peggy Mayers. She's the Executive Director and CEO of the Organic Materials Review Institute. And do we have a lot to talk about today? Peggy, so we were talking before the break about synthetic compounds that are allowed, and I know that those are reviewed and evaluated by the National Organic Standards Board. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure, I would love to tell you. The National Organic Standards Board, or the NOSB, is a federal advisory committee to the National Organic Program. So nothing can be added to, removed from, or changed on the national list without the NOSB first making a recommendation. So the NOSB is a 15-member voluntary board. They're appointed by the U.S. Secretary of Ag. And these people represent different aspects of the organic industry. For example, there are certain consumer seats, environmentalist seats. There's a scientist seat. There are seats for farmers and processors. There's a retailer seat. So the idea is that these people are supposed to represent these different groups within the organic industry. And so really the main reason for the NOSB is to review materials for consideration to be added to or removed from or changed on the national list. So there's quite a process that is gone through before anything is changed on the national list. For example, if someone wanted to add a material to the national list, they could submit a petition. And there's a humongous and a lengthy process to do this. In fact, it takes about 2 years for the whole process to go through, from the time the petition is submitted until a decision's made. And within that time frame, there are no less than two opportunities for public comment on that material. And there are some consumer groups who definitely take advantage of that, who notify their members and supporters when issues come up like toxic synthetic materials being proposed for addition on the list. So the NOSB looks at the petition. They usually have a technical report that's been provided that goes into great detail about the material, its toxicity, its persistence in the environment, the impact on the environment and human health, and so forth. So there's very much a lengthy process, like I said, that includes public comment before anything is changed on the national list. And the other thing I'll say is that your listeners, anyone, can make comments. The National Organic Standards Board meets twice a year, once in the fall, usually October, and once in the spring, usually April. And their agenda is published, their recommendations are published, and so anyone can submit a comment saying, I agree or I disagree with this recommendation for these reasons. And the NOSB really listens to those public comments. I've actually seen them change their recommendations based on the comments that they receive.
Yay, I'm very happy to hear that.
Yeah. Well, in fact, let me tell you a quick story. Back in, it was 1997 when the first organic standards were proposed and drafted, and they included what we now call the Big Three, GMOs, sewage, sludge, and irradiation. And at that point in time, the USDA received more than 275,000 comments in opposition to those three. And to this day, that remains the largest number of comments that the USDA has received on any topic. And so public comment is very important, and it can make big changes.
Good. I'm glad to know that we have some power. And that's a very good story, a very good example.
Good.
So tell us how the organic certification system works. Where does OMRI fit in? And just give us the whole process so that we know when we buy organic what has happened.
Okay. Well, that sounds fun. And feel free to interrupt me at any point. Otherwise, I'll just keep talking.
Ramble on so I interrupt you.
Okay, good. So I would say that OMRI and seeds are the base. Are the basis of organic. Clearly, you know, the seeds need to be organic or non-treated as much as possible. And so that's the beginning of where our food comes from. And then the inputs that are used to grow the food are very important as well. And as we said, that's what OMRI looks at, the pest control products and fertilizing products, sanitizers used in processing facilities, detergents used in processing facilities, and that sort of thing.
So we do looking at the seeds themselves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're not looking at the seeds, right?
We are not looking at the seeds. No, that is
something
that
somebody looking at the seeds?
The certifiers are looking at the seeds.
Okay, good.
And organic seed is always preferred. And if a farmer does not use organic seed, he needs to prove to his certifier that he tried to find the organic seed in the quantity, form, that they need. Price cannot be a consideration. A farmer can't say, I didn't buy organic seeds because it was too expensive. That will not fly. That's not allowed.
Okay.
So the certifier is definitely looking at the seeds. OMRI is looking at the, input materials to determine whether they are compliant. And so, I'm going to say farmer just for this example, even though we know that there are processed products as well. But a farmer would want to become organic, and the first step there would be to apply to an organic certification agency. And some certifiers are nonprofits, some are for-profit, and some are government agencies. So they all operate a little differently. They have different fees and procedures and so forth, but they all follow the National Organic Standards. So the first thing that the certifier is going to want from the farmer would be an organic system plan, or OSP. I like to call that their organic business plan. What are you going to grow? What inputs are you going to use? Where are you going to source these inputs? Where are you going to source your seeds? What crop rotation are you going to use? Where are you going to, or how are you going to harvest, and so forth. So the certifier needs to have a written document of what the farmer's plan is. And so they do their initial review of that, and based on that plan, they can determine whether it looks like the farmer can achieve certification or not. And if there's a problem, they'll go back to the certifier or to the farmer and say, you know, we're missing this information, or we need more detail on this particular item. once the certifier is satisfied that they've got all the documentation that they need, then they schedule an inspection of the farm or the processing facility. And an inspector does go out. It is an announced inspection because they want to make sure that the manager is there, that they've got the documentation and so forth. So the certifier sends out an inspector who is, for all intents and purposes, really the face of the certifier. They're the ones that are seen out in the farms and the processing facilities. They take the organic system plan. You know, this is what you submitted to us, farmer. Show me how you are following this. You know, show me your records of where you bought your seeds and where you bought your inputs. Show me your farm. They usually walk around the farm and look at the fields to make sure that everything looks sound. And I hear the music starting, so I'll wrap this up.
Yeah. It's time to break, but go ahead and finish your sentence.
Then the inspector submits a report back to the certifier, telling them what they found. The certifier then reviews the inspection report along with the documentation and determines whether the farmer meets certification, and if so, they issue a certificate that the farmer can then show as proof of their certification.
Okay, now
and
we
I'll
do
end
need
with
to
that.
Okay, you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Peggy Mayers, Executive Director, CEO of the Organic Materials Review Institute, and we're learning about what goes on behind the scenes in organics. We'll be right back. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Peggy Mayers, Executive Director and CEO of the Organic Materials Review Institute. And we're talking about what goes on behind the scenes in certifying organic foods and fibers and the products made from them. Well, I guess we're not talking about the products. We're talking about the ingredients that go into products.
Mm-hmm.
The products themselves actually don't get certified, right?
Like, right. It's a process certification. So the certifiers look at how the product is made.
Right. And so there are other organizations like, for example, the Global Organic Textile Standards, GOTS, that certifies an end product, but they're not certifying the process of the like how the cotton is grown or something like that. And so there's different certifiers along the way. It's a lot is going on. Anyway.
It's very complex, yes.
Here's the next question. What does your organization look at and verify when making final decisions about a product, and product meaning those products that are used in the growing and handling and processing of organic foods and fibers?
Well, our process is actually very similar to the organic certification process, in that we require first documentation from the manufacturer of the input product. And it's important for people to know that we really look in great detail at these products. We require the total ingredient list of the product, everything that's in it, not only ingredients, but we also look at ingredients within ingredients, because some ingredients are formulated themselves. Mm-hmm. And we also look, we require the complete manufacturing process explained to us from the beginning to the end, so that we can determine, that's one way to determine whether something is synthetic. It may start out natural, but then something may be added or something done to it in the manufacturing process that renders it synthetic. So we look at that as well. We also require the record keeping. When we do inspections, it's very similar to a certifier's inspection in that we look at purchase records. You know, where did you buy your ingredients, and show us your sales records as well. Something that certifiers do and that OMRI does when we conduct an inspection is something called an in-out balance. We look at what they bought, the ingredients that they bought, determine from that what their output should be, and we look at their output. And, you know, for this is a way to prevent fraud, because someone who is dishonest could show records that, oh, I bought these inputs, and then on the side buy some more and mix them together. But that would be discovered at the end, because they would come out with way more products than what would be feasible based on what they showed in their records. I hope that makes sense. But
no, I totally understand.
It definitely, it's a way to reduce fraud and to find out when people are dishonest. In some cases, we do require lab analysis, mainly for crop fertilizing products. We look at the label, what they say their nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium levels are, and we check those. Another important area that we look at when it comes to fertilizers and soil amendments, we look at heavy metals, and we require tests of heavy metals to ensure that those are not excessive as well. And then it's important to note that not one individual makes a decision. Decisions at OMRI are always made by a review panel that includes a minimum of three individuals who have to agree on a decision. So it's a group process. It's very detailed. The people who do this work for OMRI are brilliant individuals. They're much more knowledgeable than I am about chemistry and science and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so it's a very detailed process, and I would say that consumers could rely on the work that OMRI does and that certifiers do as well.
Wow, it's a big job. It's, you know, as consumers, we don't always understand. One of the reasons why I really wanted to have you be on the show was because when I heard about your organizations, I thought, wow, this is all the stuff that consumers don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because what consumers get is, I've actually been doing a lot of thinking about this myself, having been a consumer advocate for 30 years, and have been talking about how we can eliminate toxic chemicals from our lives. Not being a scientist, not being a doctor, not being any of those kind of chemists or anything, I'm just looking at it from the consumer viewpoint, and what can I find out as a consumer that can help me make that decision?
Mm-hmm.
And I hear a lot from consumers that how do they know who to trust and can we trust people? And all the information, I actually drew a little picture. I was trying to look at, I've studied a lot of this stuff like life cycle analysis and a lot of these things that you're talking about. I understand about a system and an input and all those things, which most consumers don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I do because I've studied it. And so I try to draw pictures and flowcharts, and
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what's going on. While you were talking, I'm making this little flowchart: NSOB, NOP, OMRI.
Yes.
And so I'm really trying to understand this, and then communicate it to consumers. And what I ended up with the other day was that I drew a thick black line, and on top of the black line I put ingredients, and I just made up some ingredients like
mm-hmm.
you know, flour and cotton, and you know, and I put those above the black line,
mm-hmm.
and those are the ingredients that are on the label, and
yes.
then below the black line is all these other things that you were talking about, like the process
mm-hmm.
and the other sub-ingredients that go
mm-hmm.
in during the process, and the fact that some of those sub-ingredients are ingredients themselves which have ingredients.
Yes.
And so we have this whole thing, consumers, it's called the supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all the things that go into each of the ingredients. And at the end of the line, all you have above that black line, which is what we can see as consumers, is on the surface, so to speak. It's like, I think of it like the earth. You know, there's the crust of the earth, and you can
mm-hmm.
only see the top. And underneath, there's all these incredible processes that are going on, and, you know, the molten core and, all, you know, all this stuff. And it's like manufacturing is all that stuff, and all we get to see is the surface. We see
yeah.
the end product, and you get this little list that says, this ingredient contains this and this and this and this, and you never know what's going on behind the scenes. And yet, organizations like yours and others that I'm aware of, you're looking at the whole supply chain. You're saying we can't say that something's toxic or not toxic unless we look at the whole entire supply chain. And yet, this is an entirely new concept to consumers. Entirely
yes.
new.
You're right. When I'm out in the community or I'm out on business trips or whatever and, you know, chatting with people, oh, what do you do? And I tell them, people are amazed and excited that there's someone doing this and watching out for their interests. And yeah, I'm happy to tell people what we do because they're always excited to hear about it.
Well, but we need this for every single product. not just organic food. There needs to be a structure set up so that every product gets analyzed. It's like, as a consumer advocate, I actually feel I'm going to give myself a pat on the back here, because I've been doing a pretty good job for over 30 years finding and identifying products that don't have toxic chemicals in them enough to make a difference in my own health, and that I can see that if I don't use this product that I can identify has this toxic chemical in it, and I use something safer, but the only thing I know about it is, say, that it's got organic tomatoes in it, you know? All I know. That's the only information I have to make that decision. But even just using that small amount of information, I've been able to find products that are less toxic. Imagine what it would be like if there was a system all set up so that all the manufacturers would be doing what a certified organic farmer has to do for single product.
That would be so exciting. Yes, because people don't realize that organic farmers are much more regulated and have someone looking over their shoulder much more than the non-organic farmers do.
Yes.
And
what you've described today, I mean, because I've been thinking about this, I've been watching this, I've been looking, I've been researching, and everything that you've said is like exactly my plan of what should be happening.
Good.
And, I mean, I've already been drawing this all out and writing it all out and everything, and I'm going, why isn't this happening? And now you're telling me this is happening. I mean, we just need to, like, take what you're doing, what that whole process is in organic farming, and we need to apply it to every other product in the world.
Yes, I agree with that completely. And I want to just say one thing before we run out of time for all your listeners, because we've been talking about certified organic production, which is really, you know, why OMRI exists. But I want your listeners to know that they can go to our website, OMRI.org, and there's a free search function there. You can search for brand name products. You can search for generic products like, you know, feather meal and that sort of thing that's used in organic production. To see what's allowed. And I think more importantly for your listeners, there are OMRI-listed products in your home and garden stores, you know, your big box stores like Lowe's and Home Depot, and also your local independent garden stores. You can go in and find OMRI-listed products there.
So you could go to OMRI, and you're talking about OMRI-listed products for growing organic.
For your home garden.
Right.
You can find them, because a lot of manufacturers.
Yeah,
a lot of, they have different packaging. They've got, you know, the big bulk for the farmers, and then they have consumer packaging that you will find in your local stores.
Thank you so much. We are going to be done with the show in about 2 seconds.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for coming, and you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and wow, what a show.